Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of For the Record. This is episode 48 in season 3, and we have on a fabulous guest today who is making it work in a very big way in a bit of a small town. So we have on today Meredith Kent, who is a physician's associate, an entrepreneur, the owner of Skin Co. Lab in Ada, Michigan, which is in between, I just learned, Grand Rapids and Detroit. And she's in an area, I think, of thriving, new, renovated downtown, running a big practice, doing lots of Sculptra and Dysport and all the products. She's got a presidential status with Galderma, so you know she's doing a lot. And she's doing it all with this amazing haircut, by the way. If you haven't seen her hair, she's the best hair in the business. She's a mom, has 3 kids, believes in holistic approaches, patient trust, all the things that you want out of your injectors, out of your staff. Here to tell us today how to do it, how to crush it, how to make your business work no matter where you are in America, rural or in the city. So Meredith, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, I said you had the best hair in the business because you do. I've been following your haircut for like the last 6 years. If I could cut my hair off, I always say, if I could have Meredith Kent's hair, I'd cut my hair off. It's so good. I know it's not the point of the podcast.
Follow it back to the 8th grade. I've had it since the 8th grade, so.
Well, it's fabulous. And I think you're known for your little headbands. You're always so cute. You do so much Instagram work, so much teaching and training on Instagram and in general. So I want to find out, and so does our audience, how you got to this point, how you came into aesthetics, because no one comes into aesthetics from school. How did you land here in our show today?
Things find you, you know. So when I went to, when I was an undergrad, I was pre-med, biology major, like most people are that like science, and I wanted to be a surgeon. I was convinced that that's what I wanted to do. I didn't know that I wanted to be married or have kids. And so that was my mission. I wasn't the smartest kid, but I could work really hard. And so I just studied, library at 8 a.m., school all the time, and was kind of driven by that goal. I ended up meeting the man who I ended up marrying when I was still in college. So I became this girl that I used to make fun of and decided that I might actually want to be married and have kids. And that sent me into a little bit of a career like tizzy, just as a young girl in college thinking, you know, my husband said, you know, he was fully supportive, whatever I wanted to do, and kind of planned on marrying me just with me doing my own thing. But in my heart of hearts, I thought, you know, maybe that might not be what's best. So I did a little bit of shadowing, searching, and I didn't know what a PA was. I had never seen a PA. I didn't know they existed. And I knew that nursing wasn't for me. And I thought there was no other option but to be a doctor. And if I was a doctor, I wanted to be a surgeon. So I spent some time actually shadowing some surgeons, and I met some PAs. And wouldn't you know it, these people were fun. They were smart. They were doing all the things I would ever hope to do. And so right there and then I thought, this is going to be my place. So ended up going to PA school. And I went to PA school in North Chicago and graduated in 2006. And I knew I liked surgery. I liked active things. I liked aesthetics. I liked plastic surgery. And, there wasn't such a thing as aesthetic medicine as we know it now then. So I just kind of figured I'd work in plastic surgery. You know, I'd be in the OR. Fast forward. Aesthetic medicine became a thing, and I had moved to Michigan where I grew up. I actually grew up in downtown Ada, where I now live and have a practice, and just discovered that aesthetic medicine and not being in the hospital was actually something I really, really liked. It wasn't as high maintenance as I thought it was. It was highly procedural. The people I was seeing on a daily basis were normal, lovely individuals. And so I just feel like I was made for this job. It's really a privilege to find something that you truly feel like you were created to do that didn't even exist when you were training to do it. So here we are, you know, now it's all these years later, 16, whatever years later, 17 years later. And I think it's just really neat to be in this industry that's kind of a new one in so many ways.
So you're like an OG. I mean, you've been around for a hot minute. When did you actually start injecting? Like, what year did this insurgence of Botox? I don't even know what year. I mean, it was improved, but no one actually used it for quite some time. But when did you start using
Right.
products?
Well, I originally, when I was out of school, I worked in the emergency department in Chicago because I really loved the procedural element. And straight out of school, I decided I wanted to just immerse myself in everything and just go all over the place. Then I ended up working in hand and upper extremity and orthopedic surgery. That's where I learned that I really liked the bedside instead of the hospital. And then I worked in a plastic surgery practice, and ended up injecting a lot there. And that's where I really honed my skills as an injector. Obviously, injecting all the way around and doing procedures all the time, but that's when the Botox actually, you know, hit my hand.
And I think people discount that it just takes time. You know, like look at you, for instance. You've been doing this for a very long time, and 16 years in this industry is like, I mean, that's basically unheard of unless you're Connie or Julie, you know, Kaplan, those people. But it just takes years, I think, years and years and years to be good enough at the actual injections, to also really curate the patient experience, to be great at assessment. Like, there's just so many, and in business and then in marketing, there's just so much to do that I think you need. It's unfair those coming in right now, because you guys have had sort of these years to kind of hone your craft, and they're trying to do all of it at once. And so it's no shock that people like you are training everywhere, you're in demand. But I read some of your reviews online, and everyone says that the trains with you, that you're just such a precious, sweet, wonderful person, which you're also an entrepreneur. So those two things are normally, they're mutually exclusive. Usually you have to be a shark, you know, when you're in business, but you somehow managed to have people think that you're like the sweetest person ever. And I agree with them totally. So you're doing that really well. But I think your patients feel that as well. So what made you decide to, you know, to that point, think, huh, I think I'll own my own practice? I think you opened it up in 2021, fresh off of the COVID, the vid debacle, and you've hit the ground running, sister. I know your numbers and what you're doing. So you've done a great job in not so many years. But what was the impetus for owning your own business?
You know, I always thought maybe one day I would do this, right? When I'm old. And you know, you'd get a little older and you realize you don't have forever and you don't have endless energy forever. And honestly, I did this a little earlier than I maybe have predicted or thought, or maybe I didn't know if I ever really would, but I live in, was raised in this area where we are, downtown Ada, which is a really beautiful, wonderful community. And over the last 10 years, there's been kind of like this incredible kind of resurgence of the community, and it's become a very kind of like boutique kind of destination. And essentially, just an amazing place opened up right in front of me. And I thought, there is never going to be a time or a place that makes more sense than right now. Even though I am nervous, I don't know if I'm ready. And you know, sometimes you just have to ask the people that know you the best and love you, and you know, do a little soul searching, and then you take a leap, and you have to be willing to fail. And I think not being willing to fail is probably the thing that has held me back most in my life. When you work hard, because it just felt like I had to work hard to do well in school or work hard, and I could work anybody under the bus. Like, if you want me to work, I'll work. And so that was my superpower. But what comes with that is kind of like a fear of if you're working hard and it doesn't work out. And I will say that's probably the number one thing that I had to overcome. It wasn't the hours. My husband owns a business. This was not sugarcoated to me at all. I'm thinking worst case scenario as I'm doing this, right? So it's just that fear of what if I do this and it doesn't work? And at some point you have to just say, I can only control 20% of this, and I'm going to do my best work, and I'm going to do what I think I should do, and let the cards fall as they may.
I love that. I think that you just said my entire life story in those like 2 minutes. And I'm the same way. I'm a very hard worker, and I always think about that. Like, you put in all this effort, and what if it doesn't work? And so as I'm getting older, to your point, I'm getting older, and I'm thinking to myself, like, there's no day like today. Like, you know, carpe diem, as they say, seize the day. But to that point, you said you found a spot that you liked. I want to know, and this is not in anything we've discussed so far, but real estate wise, because I'm not a person who can dream. I'm not a good dreamer. It's not my strong point. You walk into the location that you think you're going to get. How do you start thinking through, we'll put the retail counter here, we'll put the treatment rooms here, we'll do this here? Did you do a full build out, or was it kind of already ready for you to walk in and start, you know, start treating?
It was sand, no walls. All I knew is I wanted the vision. And I think, you know, when you open something or you have a vision for something, I'm not really great at the vision in terms of like the tactical of what goes where, but I can get a, I know the vibe I want. I know the feeling I want people to have. I know the feeling I want to give people. And you have to have something unique, right, to make something work. You can't carbon copy like what's down the street. So I thought of myself as the patient. I thought of my little sister as the patient. I thought of my friends that had would never go to a medical practice for Botox as a patient. And I thought, you know, I want something that's luxury. I love a beautiful experience, but I want it to be approachable. So how do I mix Anthropologie and the Ritz-Carlton? And that's what I told the designer and the architect. And I said, that's what I want. I want, these are the words. I brainstormed a whole list of words, probably hundreds and hundreds of any word I could think of that might, whether it was the word shadows or bespoke or eucalyptus, I don't, whatever word I could even fathom to think about what I, what came to my mind in this space, but how I wanted it to feel. And we put together, you know, what I think is a really great representation of that. You know, it's not a big plastic surgery office that's intimidating, that obviously does excellent work, but not, you know, so someone off the street isn't going to walk in there. It's not a strip mall boutique joint that does, that feels a little, it's fine, serves a purpose, but feels a little, you know, more chintzy. This is a really high-end experience, like going to a boutique hotel. And it's like start to finish every single detail. I'm like such a psycho with details, and my staff bugs me, like, because I bug them. Like, it's just, I want everything to be perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Like the ho like a hostess coming to your house. So, and that really struck a chord. Like that was like when people actually booked, I'm like, the experiment worked, you know? We have a little retail space, which is unusual too. And the retail space, again, could be really cheesy if you let it go the wrong way, but it supports our brand. So our brand guidelines, and we are very strict with our brand guidelines, what we stand for. And so it supports the lifestyle that goes with the patient that would come see us. So it's your skincare, it's maybe a really fancy headband. It's, you know, the thing you'd want in your master bathroom to put your fancy product on. And that gives people an opportunity just walking by to be able to participate in our brand, even if they don't want to do an injection or a skincare line. They could have a fancy soap from us and feel luxurious. And eventually we get them back in the chair, maybe, but they can have this skin collab experience no matter what walk of life. And that's served us very well.
Well, you just mentioned some things there that I am working on myself. I just listened to the Kris Jenner Masterclass. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the Masterclass series. And she talks about vision boards. She's like, I was never into that thing. Like, I thought it was silly and like, you know, like a Ouija board, basically. It wasn't real. She's like, and then I did one. I was like, holy cow, like my vision came to life. And I gave it to a person, just what you said, who could then feel what I was feeling and then produce that thing based on my vision. So I'm toying with this idea of like using words and adjectives and visions. And so I'm going to say Meredith Kent told me to do it. So I'm going to go do it. It's
It's
going to
good.
work.
And you know, even taking it back a step further for people like us that are really nervous to speak things because they're nervous to fail, if you don't say it out loud, if you can't even say your goal out loud, I promise it's never going to happen. As audacious as it sounds, I'm going to open a practice like off COVID and it's going to be successful. I'm like just me, and this is a pile of sand, and I've got to figure this all out. But it takes some guts to say that out loud. And so whether that's in a journal or whether it's telling, you know, your best friend, that's a really intimidating thing to even say out loud for someone who wants to do a great job and isn't just your natural enthusiast, right?
Well,
So I think that was a that was a pivotal moment. And then the rest just flows because you've said it out loud. Trust me, the ideas start coming.
I think when you say it into the universe, you almost have to like hold yourself accountable to it, right? It like puts it in some book somewhere that you have to actually do something. But you mentioned being in downtown, people walking in. I am such a believer in that. People think I'm crazy. They think I'm absolutely a lunatic. But I think when you can curate like little spaces that from a window shopper can see it and come in and buy from you, that's a patient recruitment tool, right? Just what you said, they're going to come in and they're going to buy a fancy soap or see a cool, you know, decor that you put up, you know, to showcase your skincare. Then they come sit in your chair 2 weeks later because now they realize that you're not scary, the place is not, you know, the whole thing. So do you think that your location, like being where you are physically, like the actual location, is helpful for your brand with like walk-in traffic? Or would you know, if you picked yourself up and moved yourself somewhere else in when you opened in 2021, would it have been a different story?
I think your people find you no matter what, but I think believing, understanding this community so much, being a part of it myself, I know this patient. Like, I know that it is a bespoke elegance. I know it's low key fancy, right? So we can serve them because I know it. I think it'd be very difficult to do this in an area where you didn't understand who you were serving. But the people will find you. But I think our belief in our community, our involvement in our community, our relationships with other businesses around us, like, we're here for it. Like, we, and so that definitely helps. We encourage, everybody around us just as much as ourselves. So we're excited, and I think that just rubs off on people, and you can feel it.
Well, we had a person on week before you who was a private equity guy, an attorney, talking about franchises coming in and big businesses. And I think what you just said about patients and really knowing your market, I mean, for the smaller med spas, I say smaller, meaning like you're not a franchise, you're not a PE-backed med spa. Because you are so ingrained in your community, you know the charitable causes, you know who's getting married, and you've known them your whole, whatever those things are, your whole life, the local high school teams, you support them in their charitable causes. I just think that there's such a big marketing value. Forget being philanthropic, which is huge, like having an empathetic heart, sure. But also just the business case of like when you know your customer and you can sit with them and you know what they believe in, you can design your business to attract them. I think you lose that when you start having corporate medicine coming in and corporate company, coming in and buying things up, you lose that. So I think you're on to something there. And I think where you are downtown, like the whole thing for me just works. It's just, and it's almost like it's personifying you as a person. Like I can see you in the website, I can see you in all of it. Like I feel like you're there. It's your practice, obviously, but I get your vibe.
I agree. And isn't that the challenge with, like, corporate medicine, all these things, because it's a business. We're running a business, but the challenge is we're healthcare providers first and foremost, and caregivers. And so marrying those two things and paying attention to the two, it is a dance. It definitely is. And you, there's some things that you have to do because it's the right thing to do, and you're the provider. I don't care what the bottom line is. It's so it's different,
Well, then thinking through that as the entrepreneur, I mean, you're, CEO, also injector, also talent manager, HR, I'm sure you're doing a lot of jobs. How do you find, or where did you find, I should say, the skill set for that? Obviously, I think you said your husband has a business as well. You kind of knew what you were getting into. You didn't come into it with rose-colored glasses, but where did you learn your business prowess?
Gosh, having a business plan, like just setting that out and really being honest with yourself. Not having, I have high goals, but I also am very realistic. I'm very resourceful, so I can survive. I can survive. So, you go through times, you go through 2008, you go through things, and you figure it out, and you know where it counts, and you've got to do that. You've got to stay humble. Like, you've got to run an efficient business, have awesome people, be honest, do the right thing, and you just have to work hard. At the end of the day, you've got to work hard, and you've got to do what it takes, So I think that comes having really good support around you, excellent accounting, great, executive kind of like higher level, let's review numbers, where are we going, learning how to do that. I mean, I had to learn to do all of that stuff, but those are great growth pieces, I think that's been my most pleasant surprise. I didn't know if I would like owning a business. I knew I loved injections. I knew I loved aesthetics. I knew I loved team. But owning a business is so much fun because it's very you've got to run, it's numbers driven, it's all those things, but it's so creative at the same time. You can move on a dime. You can change your direction. You can implement something creative. And that is just, it's a lot of fun because you can do what your patients want and when they need it. And that speaks for itself in how your numbers end up looking, right? That's being just very aware.
Well, that's what we say here. Like, you can decide at 8 a.m. to do a new thing, and by noon we can implement it. Like, we don't have red tape, we don't have bureaucracy, we don't have to have a board vote on things. So I don't have any. We have no private equity money here. We're all bootstraps because we like control. We like freedom to do the things that need to be done for our customer, not that need to be done for the bottom line or the shareholder. I think that's such a distinct difference in our industry. that will show up over time. You know, those who can just do what they need to do because they can, and those who have to kind of go through all this rigmarole to get the roles and, you know, approvals and vetoes, all these things. But I think to that point, you're also big on Instagram. You do a lot of Instagram. And so between owning a business and Instagram, how thick is your skin now? And how thick was it when you started this?
You know, it's reasonably thick. I my friends joke that you know, I hardly, like, sometimes I leak a little bit. Maybe once a year I'll shed a tear. I'm working on crying more because I think it's probably good to get more in touch with your emotions. But I kind of fly like above the grid on stuff. I honestly need to work on picking up on more people's emotions because I honestly don't even pick up on it. I'm just like full steam ahead. And so I sometimes I need to like slow down and be like, oh, I need to pick up that they're like maybe not having a great day. I should slow down and talk to them about that. So for me, it's not really an issue. I just kind of keep my head down. And honestly, on Instagram, I only follow, I just follow like people I really admire across the country. I don't follow competitors or I don't follow anybody locally. And I think that keeps me just doing me. And I don't get distracted by just noise. Not that it's bad or good. It's all great around me, but I want to do what I want to do and I want to be creative in my way. And so that keeps my head really, really clear. And that would be my biggest suggestion for people. Like, stop looking around. I do my best work when my head's in the sand because I'm just not distracted.
Man, in three seasons, you have just, I haven't heard that yet. And it's so true. There's like a noise wall that you have to kind of tear down. The fact that you don't follow competitors, I think, is absolutely genius. I don't follow ours either. I just don't think, because then you start having self-doubt or did they steal that idea from me or they're taking this from me? I don't want that. Like, I can really do my own doorstep. I don't need to do their doorstep too. I think that, Meredith, is just a genius thing that you, it seems so easy, right? But I think that's just genius. Like, there's enough to worry about in your own business. Don't worry about their business too. So maybe that's why you are such a pleasant person, because you're not living in all the, you're not living in the cesspool out there.
Because I can't do it. It's just, I can't do it. So.
Well, and do people come onto your Instagram? I always find the comments people write on posts to be just absolutely shocking. I mean, like the shock and awe. Poor Christian Subio. Those comments are shocking. But are folks, you know, they come at you? Are you feeling like, you know, what you put out in the world is I think very positive. You don't have anything really controversial. How is that reception? You know, are you able to deal with comments and DMs? And I always wonder about you guys that have lots of followers, like how you live through all that.
You just kill them with kindness. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, you check more bees with honey. It's just not worth, I don't get into the weeds with stuff. I mean, if you want to have a really good laugh, you read a news article online, don't even read the article, just read the comments. People are getting fights in the comments. I mean, like, I don't have time to do that. So if you want, if I want entertainment, I'll just read comments and not the actual post.
That is so true.
I try to keep it just, you know, I will think my thoughts to myself, but I'm not going to put anything on paper that I don't want on the cover of the Wall Street Journal. So
that's a lesson to live by, folks. Is you heard it right here. Don't write it down and don't type it out and send it unless you want it on the cover of a local magazine or the Wall Street Journal, because everything gets shared now. Nothing is sacred. So great lesson. But moving, like, kind of changing gears here. I know that you are a very busy injector. I have the benefit of seeing some of your office through Aesthetic Record. You're always booked to the gills and you are running a business. And so how do you plan your day? Like, how do you think about being this great entrepreneur, you know, having all these things together with the business and the team, but also like you treat a lot of patients and do a lot of productive work. How do you do both?
Well, you know, I've learned a little bit ago, you know, I've got a family and I get up early and I have some time to myself every morning. I am a person of faith. So I get up, I wish I could work out early in the morning, but I just don't feel like it. So I get up and I do some reading and some quiet time to myself, have a cup of coffee, take the dog for a stroll, and then we're off to the races. But having that like 45 minutes, sets the tone, and I won't look at my phone until I've done that, because then I've set my mind for the day. So the first thing I am thinking about is what I'm setting my intention on, not what people are throwing at me. So that's just a kind of a goal I made for myself and I've held to it. Just, I can't open Instagram. I don't open email until I've done those things to set my mind in the right space. So that the rest follows after that. Otherwise I'm in a mode of responding all day. So get the kids off to school, take a couple shifts with my husband. And then, we've just got kind of got a well-oiled machine going on, and not without kinks. You know, my, Sometimes I forget a kid at school or, whatever, it happens. But I like to think that they're getting their own thick skin and seeing their mom work really hard. And you just roll with it. I, as type A as I am, I can roll with the day pretty well. So just keep working.
So in a given day, are you injecting a few hours, entrepreneuring a few hours? How do you switch your time between both? Because I think that's the what people ask me most often is how do I do both in my actual schedule without working all night long and all morning long to accomplish it?
The reality with having a business is you're working 24/7, and having lived this through my husband, I knew and my family knew. We decided this the first year of owning business, we're all in. Like I'm this is there will be no balance. There will be no summer. There will be no vacations. Like I'm doing everything. And so that wasn't a shock to me. But then that's not sustainable. So you've got to work some systems into place. So it started to be, okay, I'll take Tuesdays for an admin day, get things done. And really, because I do inject all day. I don't take a lunch. My staff jokes with me, like, maybe your staff wants a lunch. And I'm like, well, I don't want a lunch because I can be productive. I don't need a lunch. I work best when I just keep moving. So you don't get to that stuff. So it's in the morning, or it's at night, or it's on that Tuesday. And then I am working on having a little more of that administrative time. And that's when I can sit down and just focus and hammer it out because I love injecting people. I love talking to people. It's not going to get done during a clinic day. And the best thing I ever did is, having a practice manager who to help you with all that. You can't do it all. That is absolutely impossible to think that you're going to do it all well. Who can help you with ordering, talking to reps, reminding you of things, plus they're your cheerleader. That's an incredible thing to do. So you either have to limit your schedule injecting or get help. I mean, there's no other way to do it.
I think people who could do it, who try to do it by themselves, are first of all they're going crazy, right? They're so tired, they're frazzled, they're doing not as good of work on either job because they're just so. I know this just for me personally, you're just exhausted all the time. So I think that's like the first hire you make. But as you're thinking through, taking sort of more time administratively and growing the practice, you've obviously hired a few other people to work with you. I think you have maybe one injector or two, an esthetician. Are you growing that team? And as you think about growing that team, what is driving those decisions, the recruiting and hiring and, what you guys believe in, your core values? Even you said you had a brand book. God bless you that you have brand guidelines. I love that. But how do you think about scaling your team to feel like you and be as good as you, but also, not be you, frankly?
Yeah, you know what? It's the person, and if we find the person, basically, if you meet someone from Skin Collab, you're meeting the person, obviously, but you're meeting someone that represents the brand. They're kind, they're engaging, they're hospitable, they're intelligent. They want to keep learning, they want to keep growing their skills, and we're just super clear about that on the upfront. And some people are amazing, and I want to be friends with them, but they're just not the right fit for the practice, and that's totally okay. So we're pretty lasered in on who we are, and so our team functions that way. So whether you see me or you see another provider here, you're going to have the Skin Collab experience. My goal, I mean, this place isn't named Meredith Kent because it shouldn't be about Meredith Kent. How's that going to work out in 20 years? It's not, it's not sustainable. So it's creating a place where this experience can be had, and so we have just like the Skin Collab way you do things. And I think that keeps it very clear and it keeps people like-minded. And I love our group. Everyone here is very goal-oriented. They love to work hard. And that's not a right or wrong. It's just what fires you up. And so, the first person to listen to a podcast I love and tell me about it, you get a product. The first person to do that, we thrive on that stuff and we love learning new things. So that's who we look for. And if I mean, you can learn anything. And so it's more the person. And your people find you, and you have your fair share of people that just don't fit. And, it's harder to find the right person that fits. And I'm just very slow to hire in that way. You just have to wait for the right person. And so we grow when we can grow.
I agree with you. I mean, when they come along, it's like you just know. It's like the magical key in the lock. Just it all appears for you. But to kind of take that to your size, I think you're a presidential account for Galderma. I mean, you're a very large account. You're training for Galderma. You're training for Allergan. And I mentioned in one of my talks with you that, you know, you're doing sculpture in Dysport in a big way, and you're, you know, top account in your areas for those products, which are both very hard to do because sculpture doesn't make sense to people. And then Dysport's not Botox. Like, mm-hmm. you pick the two hardest ones to become like the expert in. So I'm curious, as you think about you and your staff, you know, how do you talk about those products? Like, how do you really go through with a patient in an assessment? Like, you're going to get toxin. I don't care which one you're going to get. You're going to get the one that I say you're going to get. Like, what does your assessment or your consult kind of look like to be able to put those products on the forefront all the time?
You know, we really listen to our patients. So when we meet someone, first thing we do, you know, they come in the room. First of all, I'm like their last stop. They have checked us out online. They've spoken to someone incredible on the phone who's been engaging, who probably knows why they're coming in. So by the time they meet me, I mean, this is like the third, fourth date, right, with the practice. And they're already feeling like they kind of know and trust me, not because of me, but because of the amazing team that is representing our brand. So they're starting to feel comfortable. I want people to know, kind of have that warm feeling when they come in. We greet them, kind of get a sense for kind of their nerves, where they are, what their history is. Have they had a good experience in the past with injectables? Have they never had injectables? They had Botox 8 years ago and haven't since. Why and on earth would something bad must happen? You should do this no matter what if it's good Botox, right? So sitting down and just listening to them first and understanding who they are as people, literally sitting down in the room in a chair, crossing your legs, putting your computer down and just listening is the first step. And I think so many people discount that, and it only takes 3 extra minutes, and the information you get is just everything, and the connection you get is huge. So I can get a sense in that time where whether all this person's going to do is a face wash or whether this person is ready to really like get a hold of things. And we'll start slow. I won't inject someone with Botox and filler and give them a skincare regimen if they've never done anything. Now, at most, they're getting a simple skincare regimen and a little Botox or Dysport, and I'm seeing them back. I won't do more because I want them to love and trust this process so much. They cannot wait to come back. And then when they come back, they're going to be like, that was so amazing. What's the next thing I can do? Like, tell me, you know, and if I sense any nerves, we just pump the brakes. It's not an emergency, which is the most fun thing about this industry. This is fun. This is for betterment. This is all ancillary. And when you gain that trust, people sit down and say, whatever. I mean, and when you are honest with people and say no, when you need to say no and yes, and tell them yes, when they need to do something, suddenly, you know, the integrity of your practice shines through. I mean, you see celebrities that are so overfilled. Someone isn't telling them no, because they don't want to lose their job. Right. And that's wrong. That's just not the right thing, but it's human nature. So if you're willing to say no, and no, you know, we're still going to be friendly, but you don't need this, or it's not a good idea for you, suddenly you have unlocked trust. And I mean, I could tell them to do whatever, and they know I'm not going to steer them the wrong way on purpose. And, that you're just there and consistent. I think that's everything. And it's 5 extra minutes in really getting to know somebody.
Yeah, I think that's a difference. And, you know, practices who spend the time doing that versus, you mentioned, like, the strip mall kind of factory style practices, they really struggle with that because they don't have the time to really learn about the patient and get to know the patient. So when they can't sell things, I think it's oftentimes because the trust isn't there. They don't have it established yet. They haven't talked to the person on the phone, or, you know, they haven't kind of gone through the steps that you mentioned, like the dating part of it, the early dating part of it. It's so true. By the time they come to you, they're like, whatever you guys say, we'll do it. You know, I think people, they discredit how important the consult is from a just get to know each other, like build each other, add a little bit kind of perspective versus, yeah. You know, you've got a wrinkle here, you've got a cheek deflation here, your bone is, you know, recessing here. Like, yes, there's time for that, but maybe it's not in the first 20 minutes of our conversation.
Totally. So. And really, like, letting people know that that's okay, right? So much of this is intimidation and not being able to be yourself. I tell people, I don't tell my designer of my home, I want Benjamin Moore OC23 on the walls. I tell them, I like a moody vibe with a touch of warmth and, like, you know, some traditional, then they do it. Right. And so taking away that feeling of patients feeling like intimidated and making them feel welcome while also letting them know, like, you know, you're obviously scientifically driven. You've got reasons for all these things. It's not wishy-washy. It is a wonderful trust factor that happens that, you know, so that designer, you know, idea, if we talk about that off the bat, suddenly it kind of unlocks this vulnerability, right? They can suddenly express their little vision board, so to speak, right? Of what they're looking at, what their insecurities are.
When you feel judged, I mean, being a patient, not an injector, I always feel when I'm sitting in a room with people like you, I'm like, guys, don't look at my face. I look so haggard. You know, like you just instantly
Right.
feel. And when all your friends are injectors, trust me, guys, you get a big complex. Like, I'm always looking haggard because all my friends are like, we could do a little bit of here and a little bit here. And I'm like, put your non-injector hat on now, put your friend hat on because I can't deal with it today. Like, I don't feel, you know, whatever the things are. But I think patients who aren't used to that, it's very scary because they feel like you're going to look at their face and say, gosh, you need a lot of work done. It's going to cost a lot of money. And I think that they prepare before the visit. That's why they're so intense about looking online and YouTube and, you know, the comments everywhere and looking at products because they want to come in prepared so that whenever you start tearing them down, they know what to do next. And they know the answer to that question. So I think we've created our own monster in some ways with the overly educated quote unquote patient who comes in wanting the Benjamin Moore, you know, paint or the certain kind of wood for the dining room table. We've done that to ourselves, I think, in some ways. So we're our own worst enemy.
Yeah, and you have to be confident enough as a provider to say, I understand, you know, if someone said the classic, like in training, like nasolabial folds. Okay, I have that is what's bothering them. Now they don't know how to fix that, and if I don't it address the fact that that word is, if I don't use that word again, nasolabial fold, and I just inject their cheek, I have treated their nasolabial fold. They don't understand that. So some of it is on us to just gently redirect the conversation, but affirm why they came. They're the client. So we do, we can't, we got to drive the bus, but also we need to be sensitive to why they are in our chair. So it's a dance, you know, it's a relationship.
And if you don't address that imminent need for them, everything else you say they ignore. Like, I think to
Done.
your point with the nasolabial, if you don't say the nasolabial fold, the cheek, whatever it is to get that done, they are fixated on that problem. And they're like, I love that you're trying to sell me all these other things, but I need this thing done that I came in for today. And you kind of lose them. So I think spending the time, but I think a lot of injectors may not know how to solve the problem yet either. So I know you do a lot of training. On your site, you mentioned like this is for 2 years or less. This is for the new injector. God bless your sweet soul for loving training new injectors. That's a hard thing to do, and people don't do it, right? It's challenging, but you train quite a bit. So, how does that look when they come, you know, in a private training scenario? They come to your practice. Are they with you when you're with patients and like shadowing you, or is it just a hands-on thing? How did you build your training part of your practice?
So part of the idea of this practice is to collaborate and have a lab, like we call it the lab, but come to train at the lab. And we dedicate private training, whatever that provider wants to work on. I want to know what they feel most confident about. I want to know what they le feel least confident about. I mean, it is a totally open dialogue. So we arrange models for them. They're not shadowing me. We are learning and treating and hands-on 100% of the time. And I'm opening my cabinets and I'm showing them my supplies. I'm showing them my McKesson invoices to show them what, you know, what I use. There's nothing off limits in those trainings. And you know, there's not many settings where you can do that. And it's really empowering for everybody. I mean, people leave confident, they're ready, they've got real advice. We don't sugarcoat anything. We have challenging patients. You know, we ask the patient their perspective. What should we have done differently? What could we have done better? You know, how could we describe this differently? And I learn just as much as they do every visit. You know, it's a lot of fun.
Well, I'm guessing they keep coming back to you as well. Like, do you have trainings where you start out with them when they're a baby trainer, a baby injector, and they keep coming back to you over and over, and you almost it's like a relationship long term. Does that happen quite a bit?
All the time. Yeah. I've trained some people like six, seven, eight times.
Well, that's a great relationship, and that's pr profitable for you, but also great that that they want to come back and learn more. I think that's. I said in a podcast a few weeks ago, we don't support new injectors in this industry. We really don't do a great job unless you're part of the industry training, like Galderma, Allergan. We don't support new people because it's too hard to train them, right? It's the liability, just not knowing. But you're out there doing the Lord's work and training all these new injectors. But you mentioned that you train your local competitors too, that you train your local market, which people freak out. You know, they like go crazy over that. But I think you stay above, you know, above the fray. So how does that work? When you are you nervous about things you should or shouldn't say or giving away your IP? How do you do that and feel confident that you've left them better than they started, but also not giving away your secrets?
I mean, it's no secret. Like, it's the Hippocratic Oath. You do no harm, you do the best work. Like, if you're keeping something a secret, like, that's not what this healthcare is about. It is about getting best outcomes for the patient. So I have zero issue. And the better everybody looks, the more people are going to come to all of us, and you find your own people. So I think it's really fun. And like I said, because I keep a head in the sand, I don't have any like misnomers. And so to me, it's all roses and butterflies, and people are going to do what they want to do. But I think it's a blast. And I think, when you're in a pinch, guess what? You have a friend to call. And if you have, someone's got a device and you wonder how it really works, guess what? You've got a friend to call. And not everybody wants to participate in something like that, and that is totally fine. But those that do have become some of my dearest friends. We've got practices just miles away from each other, but we're all busy. And we've even done some dinners, like journal clubs, and for those practices that want to participate in such, where we can talk about difficult cases and maybe bring up an article and read the article, listen to a podcast and talk about it. Because, that not everybody, some people want to be in an island, but the reality is there's excellent injectors everywhere. To think you're better than somebody else, watch out, because you're not in touch with what's really going on. If you're growing and learning and engaging, those are the people you want to surround yourself with.
Well, I worked as a rep in Arkansas, a small territory. We'd have injectors there who have a really challenging case, to your point, really, really hard case, and they felt like they had nowhere to go. Like they just sort of like, I can't give her what she wants. Like I've made this mistake, or I've done this thing wrong, and I don't have any other options. Like I don't know how to fix it. And they would have given anything for their local injector down the street to have been willing to say, let me take that for you. Like I know what to do. Come and learn with me. Like I'll come show you how to fix it. I think that Brittany Crosdale, she had the whole ptosis case, with the eyes. That poor injector had no idea what to do. Brittany knew how to fix it. Thank God Brittany knew how to fix it, because the poor patient stuck in the middle of this like thing of, what do I do? Just make my eyes open back up again. So I believe, what you're saying so much, that your local community, for one thing, you can learn from each other. Hyaluronidase, gosh, if you have an occlusion, like who has a million vials on hand? Like nobody, right? You hope you do, but you really don't. Ultrasound machines, sharing devices, like brilliant. But I think the other part of that too is if somebody in your community has a bad result, it hurts all of you because no one knows where they went. It could have been your practice, someone else's practice. Like the better they are, the better you are, because then all people think that injectables are this great, wonderful thing that you can get and you look so beautiful when it's finished. I just think a dropped brow hurts the whole community. So I'm with you on that one.
100%, 100% agree.
And you're training for Galderma for Allergan. So, a controversial question is, how do you do both? Because I've always wondered, I ran Gain for a while. How do you walk in with one hat on and keep it straight? And then, because obviously you're using both products, both companies quite a bit. So it's not that you don't know, but I would get so confused. Like, oh, I said Botox, I meant Dysport. Oh, I said Voluma, I meant to say Lift. How do you keep that straight in your mind?
It's because I use both portfolios, it's not hard. And when I'm working for the company I'm working for when I'm there, and I'm telling them all about it. But I get, I feel like the people I listen to most in the industry and look up to, they aren't beholden just to one company. Because, and that's fine if you are. Not everybody has, I mean, I feel really privileged to be able to train for both companies. So a lot of people use multiple portfolios and train for only one company. However, if someone only uses one portfolio and only trains for one company, like you, I know who's sending the check in the mail. So obviously you're going to say just that. And so I really love it when people have a diverse kind of like, or have had experience with diverse products and treatments, and all these things, because I'm going to listen to what they say. And so I think it's a benefit. I think it gives credibility to whoever I'm training for, wherever I'm training, because you've got the benefit of all that information. And I mean, we are so fortunate to have these companies that really give so much in terms of education to clients, to the providers. And you just, I'm really thankful to be in that position to be able to share that. I mean, you can't train enough. So the trainers are scarce. It's hard. So you want to make the most of those trainings and give people all the tools they need. And I talk in analogies a lot, try to really see one, do one, teach one. So we try to make everything super interactive, whoever I'm training with or for who, private or through Allergan or Galderma or whatever. Because that's precious time that people have given up from every angle. And I've been to some really wonderful trainings in the past, and that can really change like your life. I was in a training with Deb Sherman years and years ago, and she said one positive thing to me. And Tiffany, I have remembered it to this day. It gave me so much confidence. And so You remember those moments, you're like, this is kind of a big deal moment. It could be, right?
Well, I think too, and you go train with somebody, like let's say for you, when they need advice or they need to refer a patient out because they don't know the answer, they send them to you. Like I feel like you build this collaborative network. I think about Aesthetic Next every time I discuss this. You see someone, you know, an Erica Berry walk in the front door and everyone's like, oh, she trained me. Larry Blevins, he trained me my very first time, or I learned how to do this from Larry Blevins. Like people remember the stories of working with you and talking about you doing it. And I think it creates a celebrity of a different way of like a respect, a mutual respect and admiration. Like it's not because you have a cool Instagram, it's because they actually learned from you and they've believed what you believe because you told them why it made sense and why rheology was important. I don't know. I think there's a different power in being an educator than there is in being an influencer. And you can be the other, you know, you can be an influencer because you're an educator, but I think it's hard to go the other direction. So, you know, I'm all for it. But I also think too, with indications now, like, you know, Volux just came out. You can't train on that with another portfolio. It has to be Allergan to train that. So if you want to train that indication, you got to work with them. I just think that there's the portfolios now are so big, so many cool indications, new things happening that to really get a diversity of options for the people you're training, if you care about what they take away from it, you have to have both because you have to have this depth and breadth of all the things in your toolbox. So I agree with you, but I think people get really upset about like, oh, they're just, you know, I hate to use the word, but an industry whore. That's a terrible word to use, but you get the point. And I think that's just ludicrous, absolute lunacy. Do what you want to do because it's for the good of the people.
100%. Yeah, that's what you'd want. And I totally agree. And there's so much to learn. And I always say every time there's a new product, whether I use it or not, it's awesome for the industry. I mean, it pushes, think of when like Jeuveau came out, you know, Botox, I had to go lecture and say how Botox was special and different and where it was manufactured. And that's incredible because we get to share that story and it ups everybody's game. So I think it's good. It's really cool what's going on and just the ingenuity and the growth and it helps everybody on every front.
Well, the word rheology, I mean, 10 years ago, we all had like NASHA, like NASHA and Hyalocross. There was no rheology. It was like, you got two choices, sister. That's all you
Tiffany,
got.
I remember Googling, like, what does rheology mean? I should know that word.
I just put together a presentation for Revanesse, and I was going through all the different kinds of cross-linking and, you know, BDDE and what is a half-life and long chain, short chain. I'm like, I did chemical engineering quite a bit in college. I love that stuff. Like, I eat it up. I'm thinking an average person reading this as an injector, holy crap. I mean, gel science is incredibly involved. And then now to think about that with the patient, you know, the anatomic indication of where you're going to put it in the skin envelope and, you know, is the skin thick or not thick? And there's so much to know that you just got to go all in or you'll never survive here because there's just so much
You
to
gotta
know.
dive in the deep end. You really do. I think for newbies, like it's hard to do this and not and do some, do it as another side hustle. This is you gotta like live it and breathe it. You really do.
Well, no surgeon has a side hustle, Meredith. They're doing surgery all day. Like, this is not
Exactly.
a side hustle. Like, there's just no way, as competitive as it is now and as involved as it is now, to your point, with all the devices and all the injectables, you just can't. And if you do, you'll never be successful as a career. You'll never make the jump to being an injector, like a full injector, until you actually start injecting. It's just, you got to do it. Rip the Band-Aid off.
You do.
Well, saying all that, you know, thinking about your practice, where you're growing, what you're doing, you have reps in, I'm sure, all the time, which take up a lot of time. I know that they do. But I saw a picture of you with JW Ekus and some of my Galderma girls at your practice. How much do you collaborate with industry with like actually growing your practice and kind of what does that look like for you? Because some folks in the same vein say, industry, no reps in my practice. I know everything about everything. I'm like, but the business support they give you and the practice support they give you, forget the science. Like they help your practice grow. How do you leverage that and kind of work through that with all the different companies, I'm sure, knocking on your door every single day?
I love my reps. My reps are my friends. Like we hang out and it's you know, I understand they are in business. I want to help them and they want to help me. I mean, this is a mutually like beneficial relationship. So I and of course I never want to disrupt the patient experience, but I see my reps as just such assets. They help me think of marketing ideas, they help me, you know, see gaps. They encourage me to check out. They say, "Oh, you've got to know this injector. I'll introduce you to so and so." And it's funny thing. I mean, I'm extremely goal oriented, so I'll sit down and I'll say, "Okay, give me a goal. You know, give me a goal." And that I want to know what the goal could be. I mean, I'm always up for our challenge and kind of knowing what's going on. That being said, I'm a quick but a slow adopter of things. Like I want to know I like it. So I think I like when Wrestle and Kids came out, for example, like I was like, oh, I don't know. And you know, my poor rep's like, come on, Meredith, like everybody loves it. And I was like, you know, then once I love it, I love it. So I'll try it out. I'll dabble with it a little bit, but I don't want to throw it out to the masses until I know this is the right thing. So, you know, but they're always very respectful of that. They know that's my personality. And once I go for something, I'll go for it because it'll be successful because I truly believe in it. It's not some experiment or just because it's the newest thing, because there's a lot of new things that are awesome, but they might not be awesome for me or my patient or my technique. So it's gotta serve the patient and the practice, first of all. But once I go, I'll go.
Well, and where do devices fit in all that? Because I think a lot of injectors, to open up a practice, if you have a few vials of Botox, Dysport, and some injectables, you can start a practice in essence. Not maybe not a good one, but you can start one. But you start bringing in lasers and M-Sculpt and Cold-Sculpting and VBL, all these things. It gets really pricey really fast. So how do you work through that? And do you even offer that to your patients?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, I ask my patients what they want, and they'll tell you what they want. And then you have to ask yourself, what am I passionate about? What do I want to do? You know, because, and for me, I'm like very clavicle up. Like, body's just not my thing. So I have friends that are body, they'll do like BBL, all this stuff. And you know what? I refer all my patients to them. That's just not my passion. This is where I focus. And so that's where I'm going to have my time and energy. I think skincare is really important. So we have, you know, we tested all the skincare lines, all the skincare devices, you know, so you get your skincare line. And my patients want laser, and I love laser, and I believe in laser, I believe in microneedling, all those things. So that's what we have, and then we get the best of that thing. I don't have to have all of everything or just a mediocre thing just because, and I don't want anything sitting in my office that's not getting used all day long. I don't, if it's collecting dust, this was like the worst decision on the planet, and I had FOMO, or I believed some sales pitch that was given to me. So I just politely decline a lot of the calls I get, and it's good to know about everything and be able to refer to someone that might want it, but knowing why or why you don't have something helps you explain to your patient. And then being open, things change, right? The technology changes. So I'll revisit things from time to time. I have no problem doing that, but I'm not going to get, you know, I don't need to have the newest toy and everything. I don't think they're bad, but if they're not going to give my patient the result they're expecting, I'm going to leave. I'm going to have a disappointed patient that, you know, is going to have expected some facelift result, and all I have to show for it is, you know, an invoice for them, then they didn't get what they wanted. So that's the last place I want to be. So sometimes with energy-based devices, you know, they're great. Are they great enough for people? I don't know. And that's really where Sculptra has filled a void for me. So Sculptra is so reliably impressive in its biostimulatory, you know, principles, results, that I mean, I can do a lot with some Sculptra, microneedling, great skincare, and laser. I mean, it's incredible. So it's leveraging what you have, what you know that tool can do for you. And with new injectors, a set aside of business, you know, a lot of it's knowing what I can promise my patient. What does two syringes mean? What does four syringes mean? I mean, you got to practice and have experience to be able to give them an honest assessment. So energy-based devices and devices get kind of dicey because sometimes you just don't know. Sometimes it's billboard worthy, and sometimes it's like kind of falls flat. So I'm really careful on knowing what I can expect for my patient.
I
It's
think
a,
you.
I call it like the worth it rating. You know, what's the ROI for the patient?
I think you mentioned, well, a few things that I think are really critical. You mentioned like Wrestling Kiss, not doing it because everyone else was doing it. I think that's a mistake people make just in life in general, but certainly in business of I'm going to go out and buy 80 syringes of this thing because it's a hot new thing. I know nothing about it. I don't know if I even like it. And then you almost feel forced to use it. It's like if you have a fork in your hand, the whole world's, what is that saying about the whole world is a spoon or whatever that thing is. But if it's what's on your shelf, you got to use it. What if you don't like it? What if you don't know how to use it yet? And then you get a skewed opinion of it because it doesn't work, well the first time. I think that's such a risk. And then also with the devices, I think too, the patient selection is so critical. Like they may only give those results on the billboard for like two patient types, or one patient type is so specific. I think you do have to know who's in your audience and is it the right, the right fit for you. But I watched a hilarious Instagram today Dr. Weiner from Aesthetic Clinic.
Tiffany is hilarious.
But right? It's everyone's story.
How many halls have you gone in where you've been a trainer and rep? And there's just like this hall of like zombies. And it's like all these devices that you know cost $200,000. And they're just sitting there. They're just sitting there. So it's got to be worth. If it's working, like it's as simple as skincare. If you use it and it works and you like it, you'll keep using it. And I think that's like with a device too. If it's getting used a lot, it's working, right? If it's collecting dust, maybe it needs to find a new home.
Yeah, I agree with you on Sculptra. I think that this regenerative thing that's happening right now in our industry about, you know, whether it's Radiesse, Hyperdilute, you know, that's made a big resurgence. Sculptra obviously being a huge thing. Even the exosomes, even threads, you know, that's a PDO, you know, that whole thing as well. It's a huge time for us. Like, we're changing the narrative around, you know, filling spots, filling holes in the face, and really platform rejuvenation. So I think those of you who've been using Sculptra for a long time, you're positioned so beautifully right now with things changing that for you, there's no adoption. Like, you're already there. You've been doing it for a long time. So, you know, if you're a new injector, I've believed my whole life, which is going to be, I'm going to get hate mail for this, that Sculptra is actually easier to inject than HA because it's more forgiving. If you know the ways, the hows, the whys, like the actual injecting of it is much more forgiving than, say, a filler. I'll get hate mail for sure for saying that. But that's what I believe in. I think toxin, too, is very scary because, you know, adverse events for toxin are way higher than they are for filler. Mm-hmm. People have drop brows every day. So there is just a lot happening, and you got to know what you want to buy. I think you don't need everything, but you need the things that you love and that you think work.
I was training a group of new injectors just this week, and you know, we had a whole portfolio to cover. And my advice, we've covered the whole thing, but I was like, get really good at three of them. So good, because then you know if you've got a variable, your objectives are limited. It wasn't because it was a random filler you didn't know. Because you're wondering, is it my technique? Is it the patient? Is it the filler? Let's eliminate as many variables as we can. And then we'll grow. And then we'll learn. And so it can, the whole FOMO thing and being the first person to have something, that's really fun for Instagram. But like, is it? Like, do you know what, it's fun and it's awesome if you believe in it. But like, do you know how to use it if you're the first one to use it? Like, I'm injecting Volux right now. Guess what? We've all of us that got Volux, we're on patient like number four. You know what I mean? Like, just because you have it first doesn't mean you know how to use it in the best way. We're figuring that out right now.
And is that FOMO for other injectors or for your patients? I ask myself that question all the time of like, is having to have it first so that other injectors see you and think, oh, look at how fancy Meredith is. She has this before anybody else. Because your patient doesn't even know. Like, they have no idea that Volux just came out unless you tell them it just came out. Like, they're not looking at the person down the street saying, did they have Volux or not? Like, they don't even know what that is. They know they want to get their jawline done. So I think to your point about Benjamin Moore pain, like, I want my jawline done. I don't care what you put in it. Put something in it. I don't care. You know, whatever it is. But I just think that sometimes the gram is for other people to see you in your same, like, lateral world versus the patient who you're trying to, you know, to reach. And depending on your goal, that could be your goal. If you're a big trainer, big educator, all for it. But if your goal is to drive patients into your practice, I don't think it matters nearly as much.
I know. You know, you just got to check yourself sometimes because we're all human. We all fall into it, don't we? Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just like, it's just human nature. So it's just kind of getting yourself regrouped again. Like I said, keeping your head in the sand helps a lot.
Well, I watched an Instagram live of you the other day. I don't even know when it was, but you were like preparing your sculpture for the day. You're like, I want Instagram live. And your staff is walking in and out and you're doing all your mixing and you've got your little gloves on and you're just having the best time in the middle of the morning, getting ready for your patient load. And I think that people probably see the authentic version of you on Instagram as well and think, gosh, I want to go sit in your chair because you seem like a really, you know, knowledgeable, very science-based person, but also that you're approachable. You know, you're the anthropology Ritz-Carlton person as well. So I love your IG vibe. I think it's great. But how do you decide that, though? How do you decide what to put out for your practice Instagram versus your Instagram? Like, how do you make those sort of marketing and branding decisions?
Well, you got to like think about who's looking at it, right? And the goal is always that it represents the brand. So for the office, it's following brand guidelines. I mean, it's got a certain font, it's got a certain color, it's got a certain look, and I might like something, but it doesn't fit the brand. So it's not happening. We threw a baby shower today for one of our beloved estheticians, and the balloons are really cute, but they fit the brand. You know, the colors, you know, it's got to fit the brand. So that's, you know, it's got to be authentic. It doesn't want to be artificial. You know, we try to use as many real things as we can, but at the same time, it needs to be cohesive. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Because I want when people, that's their first date. That truly is their first date with us. And so when they walk in, I love it when they're like, oh yeah, this is even, greater, better in person, or they could almost smell it like through their phone, right? Representing what we do, who we are, highlighting the personalities. Hopefully you see like a bright light, inviting space that's also very relaxing, you know, hospitality driven. For personal IG, I mean, that's my place to like kind of play and have fun a little bit, because I don't have to be so serious, because you know it's not corporate. So that's like education. That's just like having fun and you know showing a little bit of real life, you know, to keep it real, because it's life's real. You know, I had a mattress delivered accidentally to the practice today that didn't go to my house. It showed up in the middle of the day. A mattress.
Well, I mean, in case you're tired later.
It happens, you know. Oops.
Well, but I think your personal Instagram, you know, it's still business. I think our personal Instagrams now have become business, but I think it is much more encompassing of you as a whole person. You know, it's your lifestyle is like a mom and, you know, wife and doing things in your community, but also injecting and also tons of education. Like you got tons of education on there, lots of really good content. But, you know, you are a mom. We were just talking about raising our kiddos. I've been at a kid field trip all day long and I'm exhausted. And Meredith has three kids, so she's probably always exhausted. But, you know, as you look at your life and going forward and as this thing grows, can you sustain multiple locations and keep your family intact and be at games and do dinner and all these things? Like how will you long term grow the practice while you're also growing your family in essence?
You can't do it all. I mean, yesterday I came on Tuesday, I came home from a training. I had some guy repairing my house. I had a tutor there, tutoring my 10-year-old. I had a gal who would come and prep three meals for my family for the week, healthy meals, so we're not eating pizza. I had a mother's helper who's driving kids back and forth from school. And you can't, you it's I was like looked at my house and I was like, this is like a factory when I'm not there. Like it's a production. I wish I could be there, but like you're not at every game. You try to be. You try to tuck your kids in when you can. I fall asleep with them most nights because I'm tired. You try to get out with your husband a night or two a week to like have a glass of wine and talk, because you haven't really talked to each other. It's a constant, like you've got all these buckets and you're just trading water in all the buckets, and it's they're rare moments that they're all feeling perfect, you know. And I think I've had to accept that that's okay. I've had to accept delegation and help. I'm very resistant to that, but that's just how it's got to roll. I've got a super supportive husband and he is helps me so much, and my kids are wonderful. And I mean, I was raised in a house where you work hard, and so that's a value to me. So I'm glad my kids see that, but it's not at the detriment of, you know, loving them. And I want to teach them your job doesn't love you back. And so at the end of the day, I mean, sometimes when you're driven, like, yeah, you know, goals and, you know, faster, better, more, that is can become kind of like that little like trophy idol in your life, and that fuels my fire. Like that makes me feel good, but that's not always what's best for me, right? Because at the end of the day, I want relationships. So the cool thing is, like at work, I love my relationships. I love my relationships with my patients, with the people I work with. So my work doesn't love me back. People love me back, and so that's where you can where I pour my energy, whether it's at work or at home. But long answer to, you know, a really, you know, short question. I don't do it all, and you know, things fall through the cracks. Like I said, I forget kids at school sometimes. They have to find rides, but you know, that's life. I hope they
I
grow up and
think,
work hard and kind of figure out problems.
well, I think it's life's biggest question. I mean, we hear that as moms all the time. Like, how do you do it all? I'm like, I don't. I mean, my house right now looks like I'm in the middle of Christmas decorations. I have a tree still in the box. I have two up. I have one still in the floor. Like, you know, it's constant chaos. I left my dog at the daycare a few days ago and I had to let him spend the night because I forgot about it. I'm like, oh crap, I have a dog to go pick up. Luckily, Christian gets picked up from school, but we have a person who does it every single day because I can't get there. But I'm the same, like, yeah, I grew up in a house where my parents worked all the time. So they weren't at things. Like, and I never missed them because I just knew they were doing work things. And so I go to things now, even today, and all these moms are like, you know, their entire life is around their kids. And I'm like, gosh, I wish I could do that, but I just can't. Like, I'm responsible for the payroll of people who work here. Like, they feed their family off of this business. I have to make this thing work because they're all depending on me, just like my little boy's depending on me. Their kids are also depending on me. So I think you have to look at it as you think about the pressure of it, of like how you're enriching other people's lives. And like, you know, you're now impacting lots of kids and lots of families and lots of things. I think of that, about that a lot because I'm like telling myself, you're not a bad parent. You're not a bad
You
parent. You're
know,
not a
but
bad
you felt
parent.
loved growing up. Christian knows he's loved. You
Oh,
know,
yeah.
it doesn't, you know, it's, and also I think, Tiffany, it's knowing it's coming to terms with yourself. I mean, I pretended to be a stay-at-home mom on maternity leave one time, and I joined MOPS and did all this stuff. And then I like didn't tell anyone I had a job, and then I like quit at like, 8 weeks. I was like, oh, I gotta go back to work. That's not me. It's not my best self. If I wasn't working, I'd be signing up for marathons. I'd be repainting my, I don't know. I don't shine as a mom or a wife when I don't have this going on. And so that's okay to come to terms with. Other people are really different. This, your life would overwhelm them. They would totally melt down. But the way you are created, this fans your flame. This is who you were created to be. And I think we're getting better about accepting that. But sometimes when you go on those field trips, I get what you're saying. All of a sudden you're like, I don't know any of these people. They all know each other. They have lanyards because they volunteer at school every day. I've never walked in the school once this year. Like, I get that, but I've had to just come to terms with it and say, you know what? This is just who I, this, I'm doing the best I can, and this is how I shine the best. Tried it the other way. COVID's a good example. I was a total mess. My kids could not wait for me to go back to work.
Well, I would tell you, we give a lot of money at school because we can't be there. I'm like, my guilt is less. So at every fundraiser, like, buy every kid here a book, we'll pay for it. That's why my husband did
No,
that. He said,
we all
we
play
give
our
money.
role, don't we?
We just give money. Like, my mom guilt is less if I give more money, which is terrible. But, at least I can live with myself. To your point, I'm looking at myself and I'm being a realist here. Like, I can do that. I can't be at the party at 2 o'clock to do cupcakes. I'm so sorry. But no, you give me hope that I can be okay with it and come to terms with it. But I just think what you're doing is phenomenal. I think where you are, what you're doing, what you're building, the way that you train others, that you're accepting of your community around you, it's all such a shining example of who you are as a person. And probably I'm sure your staff, I've met all of them, but I'm sure your staff is the same way. But what's next for you as a person? And what do you want to do with, with yourself, whether it's outside of this work and this industry or even within the industry?
I'm committed to take a few more breaks. So quarterly, I'm going to take a little time off. So I've been trying to do that. It's a little time, but just to regroup. I have found, when you give a lot, and sometimes I'm learning to like listen to warning signs, can burn out a little bit, So like for me, when I stop feeling creative or when I kind of begrudge a long day, I know I gotta like hit pump the brakes. I need a minute. So that can be a weekend away. It can be like having a short day at work. It can be taking a little vacation. So I'm trying to be a little more aware of that. My team's incredible. I'm so thankful for them. And I think just continuing to grow in hospitality. What more can we do? How can we, that's a never ending fun challenge that I think is invigorating. So that's Skin Collab. That's who we are. I think just staying true to those core values and figuring out how to really pour into that and grow that is where we are. And I'm so thankful for, you can, like I said, you can only control so much, and we're just doing great and enjoying every day. It's like when I come to work, I'm excited to come to work every day. And so I want to keep it that way. So I think guarding that at all cost is really kind of my focus now that we're not running quite as 24/7.
Well, it's in, and there's no way it's not because of your hard work. Like, obviously, sure, 20% you can control, but I think that your work ethic and what you're pouring into it, your whole family is probably pouring into it, is I'm sure a big part of the DNA of that practice and why it's so successful. So, for the record, you have been a fabulous, very fashionable, with that precious little headband on, guest today. So, if you guys aren't watching this on Spotify or YouTube, go watch it because Meredith is so cute. But you've been fabulous, and I love all the business advice. You're like a life coach, but also like, the real deal Lucille coach. So, I've learned so much from you today. I'm going to go home and put it into practice. But thank you for coming on. Any last words you want to share with us before we roll off?
It's been an honor to be a guest. I so appreciate the work you do and just championing education. You really are, Tiffany, like this is part of like how these interactions and colleagues get to know each other. This is how we're talking to each other and how we're growing and learning from each other. So I'm just privileged to be here on a platform that I admire all of your guests and you and all the work you do. So thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. And hopefully I'll be seeing you in September at Aesthetic Next, and hopefully more things coming up soon. But if I come to Michigan, I'm coming to visit you. I promise.
Come on
If I can
over.
stomach the cold, I'll be there.
Bring your parka.
Exactly. Well, guys, we will see you guys all next week for episode 49. And Meredith, again, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record.
This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice. It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.